Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Brizzy Atlantic's Interviews, where we get to know the people behind and in front of the creative industries. We're your hosts, music web designer Ross Barber-Smith from Scotland, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists and musicians. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as Electric Kiwi.
And I'm singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Marcin Avelli from Canada, a man who wears many hats, literally and figuratively. When I'm not releasing music under my own name or my side project Midnight Soundtrack, I'm producing and mixing records for other artists or directing and editing music videos and music documentaries. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as Marcin Avelli.
Indeed. I hope you've all got Marcin's new EP, which came out a couple of weeks ago. But if you're still in the spending mood, we have some awesome shirts for you on our website, available in 7 different colours. There's a link to them in our show notes, so go and get them. And please use the coupon code BTARocks and you'll get 10% off as our way, as our little way of saying thank you.
You're trying to copy what I say, that's why.
I just didn't want you to feel so bad. Yeah. So, you know, I purposely, you know, got my tongue in knots.
Right. But, well, thanks for mentioning my EP. I'm really excited about it. And everyone can just go to my website, marcinavelli.com, which was created by the wonderful Ross Barber-Smith over here of Electric Kiwi. You can actually preview the entirety of the EP. And you can also support my upcoming second full-length solo album. All the details are on my website, so go check it out. And that'd be awesome. We'd love to know what you think about it.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah. So joining us this week out of Minnesota is Neil Hilborn, a college national poetry slam champion. That's a bit of a mouthful. In August of 2013, Neil's poem OCD went viral, garnering over 7 million views to date, making it one of the most viewed poems on YouTube.
Neil is also the founder of Thistle, a Macalester literary magazine, and has run numerous writing workshops with college and high school students. His work has been featured in publications such as Borderline Magazine and Orange Quarterly, and his debut full-length book, Our Numbered Days, is now available. We're excited to learn more about Neil's experiences as a poet and the advice he'd offer to his fellow creatives. So, welcome to the show, Neil.
Thanks for having me, all. I really appreciate it.
Please tell us 3 things about yourself that everyone should know.
I grew up in Texas, so sometimes when I get really tired, the Texas accent comes out a little bit. Let's see what else. I have, in addition to a bunch of mental health disorders, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, I have relatively severe brain damage from 7 major concussions. And despite all that, I still bike everywhere all the time, and you can't stop me. So...
Yeah, I love that. That is awesome.
Your video of your poem OCD went viral.
Yes.
Did you expect such a great reaction to it? And how have you leveraged, you know, the exposure that you've had from that to sort of move things forward in your career?
And let me interject to say that I cannot watch that video without getting goosebumps and teary-eyed every time.
Oh, just, thank you.
I think that's you and 6 million other people.
Yeah. And that is directly why I needed to reach out to you and bring you on this show to talk, because it's such a powerful performance.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. You know, it's funny that was the video that got a whole bunch of traction, right? Because like, especially strange because that video that was recorded, I think we recorded it in 2013, that was, I'd already been performing it for like 3 years at that point. Like I wrote the poem, started writing it in 2010, and kind of finished editing it and really debuted it in 2011. And, I like over the couple years in there, like I'd competed with it for years at poetry slams. And I'd been on tour with it. So I'd probably performed that poem like hundreds of times. And I technically retired that poem. I was like, never going to do it again. And then we happened to be at a poetry tournament in Madison, Wisconsin. And Sam, the executive director of Button Poetry, was like, hey, Neil, I don't have a good video of OCD yet. Like, cause I'd made individual finals of this tournament. And he was like, I don't have a good video of OCD. Just like go up there and do it. And I was like, sure, Sam, whatever. And it was going to be the last time I ever performed it. And then like a couple months later, like somebody just happened to post it to Reddit at the right time with the right title. And it made the front page, like got 4 million views in a day. And then because of it, I got contacted by booking agencies and publishers and stuff like that. So it's, you know, it's kind of weird because it's sort of gone viral twice now, where like that first time was in 2013. And because of it, I've just been touring full time, mostly at colleges, but also at a bunch of venues. Just doing poetry as my living, which is a crazy thing that I get to say. And you know, back then we didn't know what we were doing. Like now, like when we record videos, we like hook into the soundboard and like actually record audio. And this one, we're like, oh, the shotgun mic's going to be fine in this loud, echoey room.
But you know, it's a lesson though. It's not about all the bells and whistles though. It really does come down to performance. And this goes along for a musician. It comes down to an actor. It comes down to anyone. It comes down to getting that moment of truth, that humanity that people could connect with. And that's what impacted me so much, because I'm someone who struggles with mental illness as well. And, you know, it was just so vulnerable and so true and so naked, you know, that I find that that takes bravery. And, you know, that's why it moves me every time I see something just so beautiful like that, which leads me to want to ask you about using mental illness, or I should say using art and poetry as a way to maybe maneuver through mental illness, better understand it, to, you know, use art as therapy, which is something I've done for years in my music. I mean, I'd say 90% of everything I write about is somehow derived from my own struggles with mental illness. So what I want to know about from you is, you know, as someone who has written about mental illness in your poetry, how important do you think it is for creatives and those in the public eye to talk about these issues?
Oh, I think it's so important. I think that the way that people get into conversations about, maybe it's mental illness, maybe it's just their own mental state, maybe like people just have trouble talking about their emotions, but they feel like, because like two people have experienced this one like piece of art and it's caused them to feel like a similar emotion, then they're able to open up about their feelings in general. Like I feel like art is the way into your internal state. I feel like if anybody's gonna talk about it, it's gotta be artists. Like Jesus Christ.
I almost feel like it's a duty that we have, you know what I mean? Yes, I said duty, let's all be childish now. Duty. No, but seriously, like I feel like we're not doing ourselves and anyone else justice if we don't dive into these deeper emotions and psychological turmoil. You know, there's a lot of fluff out there. There's a lot of garbage. There's a lot of just music that makes people want to bounce their heads, or movies that are just void of any truth, you know?
Right.
So I think the world needs that. I think people need that. And I think the more that we can normalize these sort of things, the less suicides there are. I know it sounds so extreme, but it really is true. The less someone feels so isolated and alone and crazy, you know, I always tell people, look, I sort of go to such an extreme, but if you found out you had cancer, okay, would you be embarrassed to tell people? Would you be embarrassed to tell people you're seeking help for that from a professional who deals with that every day? No. Right. You know what I mean? If you had any sort of ailment, from the smallest, you know, scratch on your skin to a broken bone, you know, you would go to a professional to heal that, you know, and you wouldn't be embarrassed to tell people about that. So just because it's a mental scrape or a mental broken bone, you know, you shouldn't be embarrassed to talk about that. And there's no shame in going to a professional to seek help for that, to help heal, to help move through that. And also to find ways for you to, if you're an artist of any sort, to use that as a vehicle for expression, to move through it and to help other people.
Yeah.
I'm very passionate about this. So I'm going to be, I can't help it. It's something.
Do your thing, dude.
We are completely on the same wavelength, man. That's totally why I want to talk to you right now. You know, so would you agree with that? Would you agree that it's a responsibility in a way?
Yeah. Well, I also think that it's your responsibility as an artist to just tell your own story as openly and as genuinely as possible.
True.
And I think that audiences and readers and listeners can always tell when you're trying to trick them, you know, like people like know when you're being disingenuous. And so I've always thought, as like my job as a writer and a performer, is to just tell my story and just, and relate whatever I happen to be going through as just as genuinely as I possibly can. Because like that's that sort of specificity and openness is what people are going to really connect with. So yeah, man, I think that like, just gotta talk about your story and talk about what you're going through.
Absolutely.
As long as it feels true to you, and as long as you really care about it, like,
yeah, right.
That's what people are going to connect with.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think it needs to be your own story. And I guess I just, what I'm trying to say is if part of your own story is dealing with some sort of mental illness, or just, yeah, or like you said, even if your mental state is just not in a great place or whatever,
right.
Yeah, talk about it. Why not? Don't be ashamed.
Yeah, man.
Even if you're not an artist, even if you're just anyone, don't be ashamed to talk about it. And it doesn't mean that you're crazy. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It just, you know, so that's our public service announcement for this episode.
I heard somebody I was doing a TED talk once, and somebody else, he did a thing where he's trying to sort of recontextualize mental illness. And he talked specifically about, what's the term he used? Neuroatypicality. And you know, sort of like just trying to like think of it not as like you are ill. It's like, hey, this is just the way that your brain functions. And you know what? Sometimes it does disrupt your day-to-day function. And that's when you talk to a professional. That's when you get somebody who really knows what's going on. But like, otherwise, if it's not messing up your day-to-day function, like, it's not necessarily a wrong thing. You just got to figure out how your brain works and how you can work with it to achieve whatever you're trying to achieve, you know?
I know you run workshops, and I'd be curious to find out, like, you know, as someone who runs workshops, do you find that there seems to be like a common struggle that people that you work with have in terms of their creativity? And is there anything that you can do to overcome those kind of struggles?
Yeah, I think especially in writing workshops, the thing that people come up against so often is like, you know, people are like, oh, I have writer's block or whatever, right? But I think that writer's block is so often like, because like we know what's good, like within the art form that we're producing, like you know what's supposed to be good, you know what it's supposed to sound like, but sometimes you come up and you like can't produce it. So I find often, at least when I have writer's block, I'm like bumping up against a cliche, and I'm like, I can't write this cliche because I know it's bad, right? And so I'm like, well, what else do I write? Because all I can think of is this dumb line. And so I tell people, I'm like, dude, write the line. Like, get that brain garbage out, because, you know, like, you're going to write that cliche and there's going to be another cliche behind it and something else behind that. But then, like, once you get all that detritus out of your brain, then you can sit down and, like, actually write the stuff that you care about, you know? So I say, yeah, that's really all I'll say. I'm like, don't be afraid of the garbage, dude. Like, this is your own poem. You can go back and cut all that stuff later. Like, nobody has to know that you wrote that.
It's funny how I totally read that. You get totally afraid of not writing something perfect. I don't know if it's something some people like myself deal with perfectionism and stuff, but it's still, just write it, right? Or for me, write about having writer's block. about it. It's suddenly you have
a topic.
Write
about whatever's in your... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just whatever's in your head, get it out, and then there's always going to be something behind it, you know? I think that sort of idea of perfectionism is really... it's really prevalent because so often people are like, everything that I create is a perfect reflection of who I am. So if this isn't perfect, then I'm not. I'm like, dude, that's not.
Do you think that a lot of it comes from like a fear of what other people are going to think or other people are going to react to? Like, how do you combat that kind of thing? Because I guess so many creative people have that fear of someone's not going to like what I do. But I guess it's that it's coming to terms with not everyone's going to like everything that you do. Like,
And that's a big part of it. I think that, you know, something I've actually learned from a lot of comedians is that like bombing never killed anybody, you know, the times that have been the performances that have been most helpful to me in my career, like aren't the ones that went really well, because like, I know what that feels like, you know, it's the ones where like everybody hated me and I like really failed miserably and they wanted me to go away, you know, because I'm like, oh, that really sucked, but it's over. Like, nothing bad happened. I still got paid, so, like, whatever.
It's kind of an exposure, isn't it? It's kind of similar to what you're doing exposure.
Yeah, exposure so it's therapy. Like, oh, cool. Like, I'm not, you know, I failed, and, like, it didn't even touch me, dude. Like, I'm still fine. So, yeah, I think failing publicly is, like, really, really helpful, because, like, the first couple times you think you're going to die, and then you're like, no, I still got on my hands and stuff. This is fine. Like,
you're catastrophizing. Exactly. Yeah. What I did want to say is I wanted to share something. Over the last year, I don't think I've written a complete song in the entire year, which is very rare for me. This hasn't happened in a long, long time. And yep. I think it was last week, actually, during my weekly therapy session, it was brought up to me to, why not write not for an audience, right? Just go back to writing completely for yourself. And, you know, it'd been so long that I just sat down and wrote something, not thinking to ever share it. You know what I mean? Not thinking, okay, that, you know what, this isn't good enough. I'm going to scrap that. I'm going to try something else. No, just go with that, whatever you're going with, because it's just for me. Now,
yeah, man.
That's always been when the best stuff comes out, and then it's not just for you. But you got to trick yourself. You got to be like, this is just for me. Who cares?
I'm not showing this to anybody.
It's just for me.
I'm just chilling, dude.
And, like, you know, that's what we should do
with all these interviews. Yeah, we should just pretend that they're just for us.
Right. It's true, because you allow yourself. That's when you allow yourself to get weird, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that it's like allowing yourself to take risks is probably what got you in the position you're in the first place.
No, exactly.
Because you're like, this might not work, but fuck it, man, I'm doing this.
Well,
like,
you know, it's a catch 22 because you start growing a bit more of an audience, and that's amazing. But then you know, for some of us, it also starts shifting you to be even more critical of your work. So maybe that work minimizes. Like for me, I used to write stupid amounts of material when I had first started out years ago. You know what I mean? And it slowly went lower and lower. Of course, I think the same with yourself. I'm sure the quality went up a bit as even if you wrote lower, just because you're doing it for longer. Sure. But, you know, it minimized so much that it's like, okay, this is definitely a fear. This is a fear of failure. It's as simple as that. And failure in any term, whether if failure can just mean that you're going to write something that's not great and you're going to get down yourself, or that's you're afraid people are not going to like it. So it's, you know, it's getting yourself out of that mindset. And I guess all I can share is my own experience of pretend like you're not writing it for anyone. Just write it for yourself.
Right.
And you're going to be the most honest and vulnerable. And it's going to be the most therapeutic.
And I'm happy that I have editors and have people that I've been working with for years. You know, generally, I'm good at what I do. Tell me if this is trash, though. So,
do you think that comes with you being more confident in what you're doing, though, over the years? Because, you know, I'm sure when you started out, and I can relate to this, if anyone said anything bad about what you're doing, you'd probably go into a ball and start crying. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm awful. Oh my God. You know,
I'm a terrible artist.
I know, exactly. Sure. So, like, where does that validation come from? That's something I'm always curious about. Is the validation your own validation, or do you think some of it has come from an outside source? Because, you know, it's that whole thing of confidence really needs to come from the inside.
Yeah.
But, you know, so many artists actually need that outer validation. Hopefully we can grow past that, because what happens when that goes away? So what I'm curious about is, do you find that you've become more confident because you're just more, you like what you're doing? Or do you think that it's because other people have given you that validation and told you you're good? You know, what happens if a ton of people start telling you that you're not good? Would that change what you think about your own art? You know, I think this applies to all artists, and it's a question we all need to ask ourselves. So I'd really like to know what you think about that.
Well, I think that anybody, especially if you're a performer and if you're somebody who gets up in public and does your stuff in front of people, if you're saying you don't want validation, you're lying, right? And I think that the trap is always depending on that validation to form the entirety of your opinion about yourself, you know? So, like, I think that definitely, like, you know, I've been touring full time for the last, like, 3 years or something, and sort of, I think the part of the validation that's really helped is seeing sort of a broad scope of people at a whole bunch of shows saying, like, your work means so much to me, thanks for writing this, I really appreciate it. And not like any one individual thing, but like seeing a sort of general reaction of like people saying, like, this is important, keep doing it. That's been a lot more motivating than anything one individual said, you know? So
is it the fact that you know that what you're doing is connecting to people? Is that what I got it kind of? Is that the thing that keeps you going, that makes you feel like, okay, you're onto something here because people are reciprocating that feeling back to me?
Yeah, it's people saying like, it's people saying so often like, I really connected to this story. Like, thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for being so personal with it. Like that sort of validation. And granted, I'm still out here writing like weird ass poems about like
sure.
Casimir Pulaski and stuff like that. That like probably nobody's gonna read, but I'm writing because I'm excited about it. But like, definitely, it's encouraging for me to like continue writing spoken word pieces that I think people are going to connect with, you know, because like I see sort of the form of poems that I've written in the past that people are really into. And so I do feel motivated to keep writing in that genre. Cause people are like, you're good at this genre. Keep doing it.
So the question now is, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer, is there a part of pandering to an audience, or is it part of you're an artist that, again, like myself, like Ross, like all of us, like many people listening to this right now, you're capable of writing and creating in many different styles and art forms.
Yeah.
So is it really that maybe you're just focusing a little bit more on one particular style, or you're just sharing that one particular style with people because you know that is what they're connecting with?
Some of both. I think that I definitely, especially with poems, it's especially like spoken word poems, sort of the way the genre is going right now. I very much feel like there's a line you can really intentionally walk between sort of lyricality and accessibility, you know, and you want to be like kind of right in the middle. To me, it feels like I'm almost like filling out an equation. Like I know kind of what is supposed to go where, like where I'm supposed to do narrative to set up for like a big line, like where the sort of like where the big hammers I'm supposed to swing are supposed to be. Right.
Is that fully conscious though? Or is that kind of subconscious?
In the first few drafts, that's subconscious. I'm not thinking about it. I'm like, just write whatever, write the narrative. And then when I get to editing and when I really start thinking about putting it in front of an audience, then it's a much more conscious decision where I'm like, I know how this form works.
It's left brain, right brain. It's kind of like, you know, you're letting the creativity flow, then you're fine tuning it. So it makes sense.
Yep. So I still like in those poems I think are going to be accessible and that I think might be like hits or whatever, quote unquote. But in those poems, I'm still thinking like, okay, how do I do something that people are going to get and people are going to connect with that I'm still like representing myself in.
I was going to say, is there still a selfishness in there though? And I'm not saying that in a bad way. There needs to be.
Sure.
I'm totally selfish when I write. I think it's like the selfishness at first and then, excuse me, the selflessness, you know, allowing people to connect with that or else it's just for your enjoyment.
Right. I think all the poems that I've written that people have connected the most with are the ones where I wrote, where I was like, these are my feelings. people are like, those are my feelings too. I'm like, cool.
There's 7.5 billion people in the world. You know what I mean? To think that we're the only ones that feel a particular thing is outrageous.
Just bonkers. And how egotistical is it to think like I'm so special?
I'm the only person. And that's just who's currently alive on the planet, right?
No one has ever been this particular type of sad before. Like, oh, shut up.
Exactly. And on that note, are you ready for 20 questions?
Let's do this.
All right. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Meat or veggies?
Veggies.
Twitter or Facebook?
Twitter.
Texas or Minnesota?
Minnesota.
Fencing or football?
Fencing.
Marvel or DC?
Marvel.
Education or experience?
Experience.
The Wire or The Sopranos?
The Wire.
Fact or fiction?
Fact.
Talent or attitude?
Attitude.
Parks and Rec or 30 Rock?
Oh, dude. Parks and Rec.
We asked the tough questions here.
Yeah,
for sure.
Uh-huh. We do. Batman or Superman?
Batman.
Style or substance?
Substance.
Now, base this one on stuff I've seen on your Twitter. Okay. So, owls or unicorns?
Bro. Oh, it's gotta be owls, man.
All right, you're gonna make one of us happy, or actually you're gonna make a lot of people happy or a lot of people upset with this one, but okay. Canada or Scotland?
Well, I've never been to Scotland, and y'all have unicorns on your crest.
We
so
do.
I'm going to have to go with Scotland. I'm sorry. It's it's a mythical place. It's still a magical, and mythical place.
You know, we've got our fair share of owls,
land
too.
Of Scotland.
Yeah, for sure.
So we've got the best of both.
We have owls here too. One of my favorite bands is from Scotland, you know? So I can't, like...
Love us.
I'm like, oh, Frightened Rabbits from Scotland. Awesome.
Yes, yes. So, Frightened Rabbits are from Scotland. You are correct. And they're very good. So anyone who's not heard them should check them out.
Yeah, for sure.
So now this, I'm just going to come straight out and say it. Yeah. I don't know how tough this one's going to be for you.
No, just do it.
I really have genuinely no idea.
All right. Yeah, neither do I.
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Oh, dude. I mean, it's got to, you're right. This is hard. Like, it's got to be MJ, but like, that's actually a very difficult question.
You know what? I'm going to say for me, it was a joke question for the first like 2.5 years of us doing the show. For Ross, it was a serious question. But since Michael Bolton has become aware of the show and has tweeted us a couple of times, and since his new, like, well, it's not so new now, but the Valentine's Day special Netflix that came out featuring him, he's kind of, the Bolt's back. You know, the Bolt is back.
Well, the Bolt never fucking left, Marcio. The Bolt has always been in the room. He's been in my heart this whole time, Marcio.
I mean,
I can go the distance with Michael Bolton. I could probably throw in some more Michael Bolton puns.
It's becoming more of a real thing. You know what? We urge our audience, everyone, go tweet Michael Bolton and tell him that you want to see him on Bridge Atlantic.
Tell him that we want him on the show.
Yes.
And that you're not going to rest. You're not going to sleep until he comes on.
Just do it. Do it. Okay, yeah. So Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Ooh, Marilyn Manson, because of all the dope stuff he said around Columbine. Is really like...
Yeah, he's pretty awesome, you know, eh?
Yeah, he's just smart dude, cool dude.
For sure.
Now this, again, don't overthink it.
Okay.
Whale or kale?
Whale or kale?
Yeah, you can't really understand it because of his accent.
Cool. Whale. It's a... whale. It's gotta be whales.
I love you, Ross. I'm just teasing you. Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Ooh! Oh, man. You have to go with Jim Carrey, the Riddler.
And your final question.
Mm-hmm.
A little mini drum roll. Ross or Marcio?
Neil.
Oh!
You picked yourself.
That's
one of our guests
one.
Did that. Keaton Simons also picked himself. He says,
for sure.
Did
he
really? If you don't pick yourself, then... I can't remember what he said, but he started with, you can't... Cool.
That was like just a perfect paraphrase.
It's something about you've got to love yourself.
Wonderful paraphrase.
Yeah, that's what I meant to do. Not like, I'm like, I can't do this! You can't! Make me.
Neil, very quickly before we wrap up, for anyone who wants to do you know, what you do or any sort of creative endeavor for a living, is there one quick piece of actionable advice you can offer them to get started?
Yeah, accidentally get famous on the internet. No. it's kind of weird because like that's how I got really started. That's how I'm doing this as a career, but also like I think just saying it was just that ignores that I spent 5 years before that happened just going to every poetry show, every poetry tournament, every open mic I could get to and performing and just doing my poems hundreds and hundreds of times. You know, so I think more than anything, it's getting out and just grinding with no expectation of a reward, but like just trying to improve and get better. So it's that putting in all that work so that you can get lucky, you know?
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, I think I like that. The zero expectations, but you're working to achieve something.
Towards something.
Anyway,
yeah.
Now, I was about to ask you where's the best place for people to connect with you online, but I believe it's Twitter.
Yes. Right? So Twitter, the two places I'm most active are Twitter and Facebook. My Facebook is definitely like a good place to like see my work and see what's going on. But like connecting with you
would be Twitter.
Yeah.
Which is...
It's Neilicorn, Neil Icorn, so unicorns. You know, I screwed that one up.
There we go.
Neilicorn.
You're gonna have to change your Twitter name to Nowls or something.
I do tweet a lot about owls, don't I? It's really they're cool. All right, whatever.
Okay. awesome.
Good. We'll put all those links in the show notes so people can connect with you.
Absolutely.
And as for us, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, YouTube, and Instagram, which I always forget to mention. Head over to our website. You'll find all the links to them there and pick up one of your shirts while you're... One of your shirts? One of our shirts.
They will be their shirt. It will be your shirt.
It will be your shirt, but at the moment it's in Marcio's basement. But it will be with you once you order it and he sends it to you with love.
This is true. Lots of love and an envelope, probably. As for me, yeah. I have a brand new all acoustic EP called The Reimagining Volume 1 out now. Like I mentioned in the intro here, you can go preview the entire thing. Just go to my website, marcinavelli.com, which you can also from there support my upcoming second full-length solo album. So make sure to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify, which are all my name, Marcinavelli.
And I'm working on websites for various artists at the moment. You can check out my work and my blog at electrickiwi.co.uk. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi, and Facebook is Electric Kiwi Design.
This episode was brought to you by 30 Roses, a virtual assistant and consultant to musicians and other creatives, as well as Chris Keaton, Joe Centenary, The Rockstar Advocate, Buck Naked Soap Company, and Social Surge. All links are in the show notes, so please do check them out because they help keep the show alive.
And if you'd like to sponsor the show, help keep this show alive, then visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic. I'm not going to go on about keeping the show's heart pumping and all that stuff like
I
usually do.
Before, and it's just like,
I've done that before and you loved it, but you just pretend
You know what? Okay, look, Neil, thank you for coming on the show. it was a true pleasure. Seriously, thanks for being so open and honest with us, as well as just in general. We need more people like you that are quote unquote keeping it real.
Thanks, man.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.